guys, I'm Heather, and I'm the oldest. She's the emotional one.
Gonna hurt. Do not.
Like, I don't know if they're trying to get it to come out here or here.
Jesus. Mary. Joseph and all of his carpenter friends.
Hey guys, I'm Ben. I'm the middle child.
And he's the practical one.
Okay. Oh, what am I gonna say though?
Now y'all made me nervous.
It's gonna be a time.
I'm a sensitive boy.
I'm Beth, and I'm the baby.
She's also the swing vote.
Got the little frilly socks and everything.
Together, we make the Music List Podcast. And welcome back to the Music List Podcast. My name is Ben. With me are my sisters, Beth and Heather. We are siblings that argue while making music lists. That's the shtick. That's what we do. And what an episode for siblings. Right, so we're coming out of the holiday season getting into still early in 2026, and hopefully you had spent some time with your family and loved ones, and so we thought we might dedicate an episode to some of the best I wouldn't say musical families, because some of them aren't families necessarily, but they are DNA-related musical acts, right? That's what we decided on. Like, we weren't going to do husband and wife.
Yeah,
they
have
to actually share DNA.
Yes.
Right? It could be siblings. It could be, I guess, mother-daughter, mother-son. You know, I don't know. It could be any of those things. I don't know what we're going to call this yet, but it's probably going to be something along the lines of, I don't know, best DNA musical acts or something. I don't know. that's the rule. That's the rule. At least two people in the band or group, or I guess it could be a duet, a duo, have to share DNA in the group. Right? I mean, that was pretty much the only rule.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's
And so you guys sing a lot together. I quit singing a long time ago. You guys know better than I do. I guess the last time I sang with either one of y'all might have been when we did...
It's probably a funeral.
Oh, yeah, a funeral, probably. Maybe. Yeah, we did. It as well. Did we do that?
Yeah.
And, outside of that, because I cry every time, and so that's not really a fair representation of... But outside of a funeral where we're made to sing, we're told to sing. We never offer that up. We're never like, hey, we would love to sing at grandma's funeral.
No.
We get told to sing and we do it because we're troopers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe the last time I sang with either of you voluntarily was maybe when we did The Angels Cried.
You sang with me.
Yeah. For a high school choir concert.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah.
That was, what, how many years ago was that?
It was like 6 or 7.
Yeah, so I'm retired. But you guys sing a lot. Y'all sing like at church all the time separately because you're in Northwest Arkansas and you're here in South Central Arkansas. But, you know, just this Christmas you guys sang together.
We did.
Yeah.
The same every Christmas.
And with Hallie. Actually,
yeah,
so right. They're more DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's it like? Because I mean, like,
what do you mean with the like?
Well, I mean, because you sing with your praise band,
yeah,
without DNA people in it.
Yes.
And you sing in your praise band,
yeah.
So I just pointed to Heather. Now I'm pointing to Beth.
Oh, right. We don't have
yeah. And Beth sings with her praise band without your DNA people. Can you tell? Because I'm sure that the sibling harmony thing is going to come up in this episode.
Right. Right.
So, like, can you guys, have y'all noticed it when y'all sing together versus when y'all sing? Like you can tell your family blind test. Not that you know Beth's voice or you know Heather's voice, but, like, you can tell that they mix differently.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What's that like?
It's strange because, like, I can't, sometimes when Beth and I are singing unison, like, I can't tell who's who. And I'm singing it.
Yeah.
Like, I can't hear a difference in my own voice from hers.
Yeah, and that's probably the biggest difference. Like, yes, yep. It is easier to blend a harmony with Heather than somebody else who's not family, even people who are really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the tonality is the same. But where it really makes a huge difference is those moments when you sing unison. That's really, I feel like, where the biggest difference shows.
So is that more of a challenge or is that a benefit?
It is a benefit when we sing together. It is a challenge when I'm doing stuff with other people, because sometimes I will have to change, like, sometimes my vowel that I like, or sometimes
your
tone,
vibrato.
Yeah, to try and blend with them. But with her, I don't have to.
Mm-mm. So y'all have noticed that, like, when y'all sing, and this is interesting to me, and because this is kind of the nuts and bolts of what this whole episode is about.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the episode's going to be about. So, like, you'll notice that, like, when y'all sing in unison, mm-hmm. that your vibratos even match.
Yeah, and I don't even know that they naturally match, like, when we're singing separately. I feel like they don't. I think, like, yeah. Last night you were singing with the radio or whatever, and I was listening, and I was like, I think our vibratos are different, but when we sing together, it's just like, it's easy to just fall in step.
Yeah, we don't say, hey, could you, put more vibrato there? Or, you know, would you? I mean, it's instinctual.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. It's very strange.
It's weird because you do it without thinking about it.
Yeah. And I'm developing it some with Hallie, but, like, I don't know. Like, I guess it's kind of like if you have a kidney match or something with, it just, like, we've never sat down and said, hey, straighten your tone out here, or hey, you're sharp or flat, or what, let's get the pitch up mm-hmm. to the, it just does that.
Right.
And I think that, when you say you're developing it with Hallie, we have the same genes, you and me.
Yeah.
But Hallie, there is some variation, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, right.
But so but still there is some, she's half your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, is it something that is simultaneously natural and developed at the same time?
Yeah, I think so.
Because y'all have sung so much together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And some things come with training and some things come with, some things just, with age, maturity, things are just, but it's kind of like, I call it the no look pass. I can tell what she's singing, and sometimes I can tell where she's going to go before she goes there. So I go to a different part. And so we don't decide what part we're going to sing. We just
do something.
Do it.
Yeah.
So I think when you've sung with somebody for literally your whole life, or your whole life.
Yeah, my whole life.
It's just easier to instinctively know. And there are some artists that will, I'm sure, no doubt, show up on this list. And just the color of their voices, it just meshes, and it's called blood harmony, and it's a thing.
Yeah, I wonder we probably, I should have maybe Googled that. It's called blood. So if I Google blood harmony, it'll pop up. Should. You think?
Strangely enough, of my three picks, only one of them really, I mean, are known for singing together.
Well, let's see. Blood Harmony is a book by the Everly Brothers, or about the Everly Brothers.
Well.
Blood Harmony refers to the kind of close harmony seemingly only obtainable by siblings.
So when you hear groups like the Osmonds or, you know, there's a lot of those bands in, like, Branson.
Yep.
You know, those family bluegrass bands, which have naturally tight harmonies just by virtue of the style of music that they do. They have these big, huge families, and they all sing and play, and their harmonies are something that I'm not sure you could get if you just assembled even really talented musicians. Mm-hmm. I think there's just something about... And, I mean, even, you know... I would think a lot of times, not every time, but anatomically even, you're going to be more similar. So, of course, your tone color is going to, that contributes a lot to what your voice sounds like, is strictly your anatomy. So it makes sense that you have a much better chance of having similar anatomy to your sibling.
I wonder if twins sound even closer than just like you and me would.
I don't know. I don't know many.
I don't know a lot of twins.
The Nelson twins. Gunnar and Matthew Nelson.
Who's that?
Oh, take a dive into that. They're Ricky Nelson's sons, the actor and singer from the 50s. And they had like long bleach blonde hair, and they were like but they did sound good together. I don't know that I'd really listen for the intricacies of their stuff, but aren't two of the Bee Gees twins? No, were Morris and Robin twins?
Really?
They were. Yeah. Oh, well, maybe they were.
Any of the Gibb brothers, twins. The Gibb brothers are Robin and Maurice.
They called him, I guess it's the English pronunciation. They called him Morris.
Morris? It looks like Maurice.
It does look like Maurice.
They're Australian, question mark?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they are Australian.
That may be. So... But I imagine that it will not be the last time we talk about the Bee Gees today.
Probably not.
And by the way, if you want to listen to one of our most downloaded episode of all time, it's The Very Best of the Bee Gees is available in our back catalog. So go enjoy. So we need to maybe get on the stick here and actually start drafting some people. So the way this works, if this is the first time that you have listened to the music list, we make music lists. And each one of us is going to make three selections. In this case, we're going to select musical acts that have blood DNA in the musical group. After the three selections, we'll have nine. We'll cut that nine down to five. We'll eliminate four. That's the 9-5 round. And then we'll rank the five remaining ones from the best to the fifth best. You can't say the worst because they made the cut. So from the best to the fifth best. And that will be our five best DNA musical acts. So Heather drafts first. Ben drafts second. Beth drafts third. We snake draft, which means Beth will get the first pick in the second round. Heather will draft last, and Heather will draft first again in the third round. And then we'll have our nine picks. So, since y'all like when I speak French, without further ado.
That's not
ado. Is that not a, is that not French?
Without further ado, but adieu is goodbye.
There, huh?
There's a difference between ado and adieu.
Is there?
Yeah. There is. It's not much adieu about nothing.
I bid you adieu.
Well, you can bid our listeners adieu at the end of the episode.
That's French.
I guess. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Without much further ado.
A-D-O.
It's like much ado about nothing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Which is actually English.
Yeah.
Okay, since y'all like it when I speak English. Without further ado. Heather, you get the first pick.
Great. Well, this one of these siblings is my favorite female vocalist of all time. And still going strong. I'm going to see them in a couple of months. It's Heart. Heart in Seattle in 1973. So I chose that particular. They sing together a lot on this, but they're not really known for their tight harmonies. They're kind of known for what they each bring at a virtuoso level to the table. They do sing well together, but you know. Anne is a powerhouse vocalist and is widely regarded as one of, if not the most powerful rock female vocalist. I think that we ended up naming her as the most, the best rock female vocalist. And she's also a multi-instrumentalist. She plays flute. She plays a lot of different instruments that she also brings to the recording and songwriting. Nancy's guitar work, that galloping sound is kind of signature for her. And of course, I could have played the intro to Crazy on You she's really, really good. And she's so energetic on stage, even still. I chose something where they do their separate work because they are individuals, and sometimes whoever you're talking to, one of them might get overshadowed when you're talking about the other one. They broke barriers in the 70s and 80s and they were headlining tours when female rock artists just weren't doing that. And they're so influential to certainly women in rock and roll, but really other genre. I mean, they're so influential to grunge. Of course, they're out of Seattle, but... Chris Cornell, Jerry Cantrell, they call her, the godmother rock and roll and grunge. And they've sold 50 million records worldwide. They've had top 10 albums on the Billboard 200 in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2010s. They were ranked 57 on VH1's 100 Greatest Artists of Hard Rock. And they made another list of just women where they were much higher. But they've had 20 top 40 singles, 4 Grammy nominations, including they've had a Lifetime Achievement Award Grammy awarded to them. They were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2013. They were part of the Kennedy Center Honors, and where they performed for Led Zeppelin, and she made Robert Plant cry with her rendition of Stairway to Heaven. They were so influenced by Led Zeppelin. They've done a ton of Led Zeppelin covers. And I've seen them 3 times live. And it is stunning to watch. Number one, she's still, I don't know, when we see them this time, it may be a little bit different. I don't know. She had she went through a cancer battle. So I don't know if that has weakened her, but up until, you know, I saw her in, I guess, 2018, 2019, something like that, and not changing the key, not using Pro Tools, everything. I mean, she's just, Anne is just still that good. I focus on Anne a lot because I just love her so much and look up to her, but you cannot discount Nancy as a player and as an entertainer. She's up there just, you know, running around and high kicks, and she plays so many different styles. And but on their only, or their first number one hit, Nancy was actually the one singing lead of all things. But they do have a distinct kind of harmony structure, but, you know, the way, you know, Anne's usually pretty powerful, and Nancy kind of has that lighter upper end that she usually goes over the top of her. But as far as women in rock and roll, their influence and their position cannot be overstated for me. So,
yeah, I know how y'all feel about Hart. It's probably going to be a contender for number one, if I had to guess, just because I know how y'all feel about how y'all both feel about Hart. So, but let me offer an alternative.
Allow me to return.
I see your siblings, and I raise you 3 siblings.
Okay.
And a cousin.
Ah.
Brian, Dennis, and Carl Wilson with their cousin Mike Love form the Beach Boys. This is Wouldn't It Be Nice off of the Pet Sounds album, and I think the Beach Boys deserve to be on this list for pretty much every reason imaginable. I mean, obviously, they've got those harmonies. Everyone had a job, a function, a major job function within the band. And then when you look at their influence on rock and roll, these 3 brothers and a cousin are one of the most influential groups of people in the history of rock and roll. I mean, we've talked about it before. Just Pet Sounds, which Wouldn't It Be Nice was the lead track on Pet Sounds. The Beatles have said no Pet Sounds, no Sgt. Pepper, mm. no Abbey Road. I mean, so the influence of the Beach Boys on rock and roll is really incredible. And you've got Brian Wilson, who can be difficult to take sometimes. There is no doubting his musical genius. I mean, when we talk about musical genius, I don't think there's a lot of them out there. Ray Charles called himself a genius, and he's probably one of the ones that I would say is a genius. I would put Stevie Wonder in that group. People that can hear things without hearing them mm-hmm. and then putting them on paper. Brian Wilson is that guy. He's the tall falsetto, and being able to write songs knowing ahead of time, like, where do you want his falsetto, and where do you want like Mike's nasally mm-hmm. voice to go, and where do you want, you know, like Carl's tenor, and just understanding how they all fit together, or Dennis and the grit that he would add and stuff like that. It's just Brian was a genius composer when it comes to rock music. And then their harmonies are so tight, legendary. Mm-hmm. They did new things with harmonies that other people had not yet done. And then you've got, what I would add to that is their, and I mean, I've already discussed it, but just their legacy and impact on rock and roll, and eventually what would explode into pop. I mean, you can hear a lot of the Beach Boys in what would become mm-hmm. like 90s and 2000 pop as well. So I think they were incredibly talented. And then you add on the legacy and what they mean. I think when we did, you'd have to go back and listen, because I can't remember who all won our list, but when we did Best American Rock Bands, I don't know if the Beach Boys won. I know they were definitely in the top five, mm-hmm. and they should have been in contention for number one, because,
yeah.
I mean, their impact, and whether it's their long, deep catalog, which is really impressive, their legacy on rock and roll, and they were unique. Like, when you hear the Beach Boys, you know that's not the Eagles, that's not Foreigner, that's not the Beach Boys have a sound, and there's so much depth of field to what they've got. You know it's not Jan and Dean, right?
Right.
You, because there's so much more complexity in what the Beach Boys were doing. So for me, when it came down to DNA bands, the Beach Boys were, I don't even think I considered anybody else to be number one on my list. They just, like, I knew it was going to be the Beach Boys for me, that before I did the research. And then after the research, they stayed on top for me. So my number one pick was the Beach Boys.
Okay. How about we talk about the group who was responsible for over 15% of the Musicless podcast listens, the Bee Gees.
Why?
This is a band that mastered harmony, songwriting, and were able to reinvent themselves multiple times. All of those three things at a level that might be unmatched. All of those three things, I would say maybe rivaled by the Eagles as a band that has the harmony, the songwriting, and then were able to reinvent mm-hmm. multiple times. The family connection was their secret sauce to this group because it is all about the singing. And it allowed their harmonies to be so seamless. And because they'd sung together, like us, their whole lives. And so they share a phrasing, that tone, emotional intuition, like we talked about, you know. Morris described their harmony as one voice with three throats, which I would say is, I mean, that's...
And it's weird, but
it's weird,
yeah.
But it makes sense because, I mean, like, even sometimes... They have harmonies that blend so well that sometimes you can't tell how many harmonies there are.
Right. Right.
It's like, it's not three distinct voices harmonizing. It is just this angelic sound that reaches you and you're like, there's a lot going on there, mm-hmm. but I can't pick out exactly how much. So that really made them stand out, this genetic alignment, biological advantage of of their sibling relationship. Over 22 million albums sold, 9 Grammy Awards. They're Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees, Songwriters Hall of Fame inductees. They have a Grammy Legend Award from 1997. And their record of 6 consecutive number one songs in the U.S. stood for decades. They're the third most successful band in Billboard chart history, behind only the Beatles and the Supremes. And like I said, with reinvention, most bands, they'll peak like once. But they had to adapt, you know, so like they had in the 60s, their pop ballads, the early 70s, soft rock, and then in the late 70s, they went into disco, and then there was like a backlash of disco. So then even after that, in like the 80s and 90s, they were writing hits for mm-hmm. just behind the scenes for tons of other artists, Barbara Streisand, Dionne Warwick, Kenny Rogers, Diana Ross, which shows their ability to adapt and make a change to still stay successful and continue making music, whether or not they're the ones actually singing it or not. So I love the Bee Gees, and obviously the world does too, because it's our most listened to and downloaded episode. So
they have a very distinct, it's not even like it's just a standard, you know, good voice. I mean, their tone, it has to be that sibling mm-hmm. DNA magic, because I don't think anybody else that's not related and doesn't have that same type of color to their voice could blend with yeah. them. Their voices are very distinctive.
Yeah. You can manufacture something sort of similar.
Like, but it's always like a caricature.
But it is
of
an
it.
Imitation. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I go again.
Yep.
Well, all right. I don't think this one's going to be received very well, but their last world tour was named DNA, and it's the Backstreet Boys.
Oh.
Don't wanna hear you say I want it that way.
Tell me why.
Ain't nothing but a heart.
Tell me why.
Ain't nothing but a mistake.
Just tell me why.
I never wanna hear you say
I want it that way.
I know that. So this is a medley of a bunch of their songs that they did a cappella. They did this for like a Walmart concert series, interview. So there's like a long, like 12-minute clip of them doing a lot of their hits completely a cappella. Hmm. And I wanted to pull that out because this is something they do at their concerts. And I think when people think Backstreet Boys, they think The Machine. Mm-hmm. They think Too Simple. They think like they, if you just think, oh, that's pop music, it's nothing. It, a lot of the time it's a throwaway for people. But like, I wanted to showcase that, like, they are singers. Mm-hmm. And this is how they got their start, was singing a cappella going around high schools in the U.S. before they really, like, they hit it big in like Europe and Asia before it caught on in the U.S. But they are the best of the boy bands vocally. Mm-hmm. Each of them are the strongest on their own. And then together, they are musically very talented. It's not like they just pick five cute dudes and threw them together. And like, even like, I would say that, like, you know, I would call Boys to Men a boy band too. Mm-hmm. But like, people don't really equate, because they're two different styles of music. Mm-hmm. So as far as the pop boy bands, they are the best, the most enduring, and I believe the most talented. The blood connection here is that Brian Littrell and Kevin Richardson are first cousins. Their moms are sisters. And they redefined what a boy band or vocal group could be in pop music. And so they have the richest harmonies and honestly lyrics. Like, the two biggest at the time when I was growing up were obviously Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. And NSYNC has like this super catchy, fun, upbeat, but the enduring quality of the music is much greater with the Backstreet Boys. They're the best-selling boy band of all time, one of the most commercially successful vocal groups ever. Over 130 million records sold in worldwide. Yeah, and so they've been together at a lot longer than people realize because they started and were big overseas before they came to the U.S. and brought it back and became popular with all of the boy band craze. So they persisted through three generations and multiple eras of pop music. Millennium, the Millennium album and Black and Blue both debuted at number one. And Millennium was one of the fastest selling albums in the history of music. It was my first CD ever. Somebody got it for me for my birthday, one of my friends. And I didn't even have a CD player at the time. I was still on cassettes. and I had to beg for a CD player for my room so I could listen to it because nobody else wanted to listen to it. but so there were like my, like me advancing in technology as well in the millennium. Their Las Vegas residency is one of the highest grossing residence pop residencies ever. And then they've done also a stint at the Sphere, which the clips from that are insane. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw their DNA tour at the Amp. Obviously the Sphere is a completely different venue. But they were amazing. So that in their shows, they will say, they'll turn off everything, come to the front of the stage, and just stand there and sing some of their early stuff a cappella like that. Mm. And I,
who's their bass singer?
Kevin. Mm. Yeah. And so they blend beautifully. They have, each person has their own unique style and tone, but they can blend very mm-hmm. well. And so that the singing is the point of their music. It's not just the teen appeal, you know. I mean, they had that. You know, they're cute, good-looking guys or whatever. So they've endured through some real hardships, too. Like, AJ has had a public battle with addiction. Brian has, like, a vocal and heart condition that persists. Still, he still struggles sometimes, but they're still going. They had the Lou Pearlman stuff early on. They were, you know, exploited, and they had lawsuits going on. So they've stayed intact under a lot of pressures that a lot of groups would crumble under. And for over 30 years, they have not only like survived the pop era, they've outgrown it and become their own thing, like this own iconic being. So the Backstreet Boys.
All All right, I got another boy group, another Ooh. Boy band here. Gonna have to go back a little further in time. And one of the, shall we say, five of them just happens to be maybe, I know this is debatable, maybe the greatest performer of all time. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about the Jackson Five.
You just got the
sunshine,
yeah.
Moonlight, good times,
good times. Don't you blame it,
sunshine.
You just got the
All right, so
you just wanna.
The Jackson Five are, of course, Michael, Jackie Jackson, Tito Jackson, Jermaine Jackson, Marlon Jackson, and then later on, Randy Jackson. And then I guess that gave them six, so they were no longer the Jackson Five. They were just the Jacksons. I would just prefer them to be called the Jackson Five. That's a no for me, dog.
Okay. See what you did there.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
Now, when we talk about success, they're depending on – they have estimates on how many albums they've sold. And I don't know – but they range wildly. Like, for sure, like 80 million, for sure. And then some estimates rate them all the way up to 150 million album sales. One interesting little – tidbit about the Jackson Five. They are the first act in music history where their first four singles all went to number one on the Billboard Hot 100. I Want You Back, ABC, The Love You Save, and I'll Be There. And I almost picked I'll Be There because, you know, little Michael singing that. It's pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah, it is.
You know? But obviously, we heard that those really, really tight harmonies with the Jackson Five, or they're the Jacksons, actually, in this one. This is older Michael, and you can hear a lot of that production in the last bit of the Jacksons that goes into Michael Jackson's solo work. It sounded a lot like a Michael Jackson song and not a Jackson Five song as he got older. They've won just countless awards, lifetime achievement awards all over the place, special commendations from Congress. They've won multiple NAACP Image Awards. Like I said, really unprecedented early success. Obviously, they were culturally important for kind of bridging the gap between soul and pop, and bringing music into different households. And that would be both music that would have traditionally been considered white moving into more black households, and music that was considered more black-centered music into white households. They have songs in the Grammy Hall of Fame, in the Congressional Record, all kinds of stuff. And then, you know, it wasn't just their ability to sing, obviously, as a dancing outfit. Really, they were the modern – they, to me, were more like what we saw in the 90s with NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, and they were more like the Jackson Five than they were like the Temptations. You know, like I would say that they were more like the Jackson Five, that 90s set. Whereas, like, I would say maybe, would we call Boys to Men a boy band?
I think I think a boy band and a vocal group are the same, but boy band has a negative connotation.
You know, like, they didn't dance, but like I felt like their harmonies were maybe a little closer to the Temptations and the Four Tops and stuff like that. But that's off topic, neither here nor there. but you know, again, I like, since we're, I feel like I'm cheating a little bit because it's not just duets, but I mean, there's a big whole group. We're talking five siblings. And then that's not even counting like LaToya, who had her own, and Janet, and Janet's career freaking exploded. That's my, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Vocal Group Hall of Fame, Grammy Hall of Fame, Hollywood Walk of Fame. I mean, you know, they're, that's not just Michael, that's the group. So that's my pick, Jackson 5.
Okay. Okay, this is actual, I know that you're going to be like, "Oh my God, of course she comes in with this again." But look at Beth's writing it down.
I already wrote it down. I already know what it is.
It's Van Halen.
Oh, you're getting the drummer in there, I see.
Yeah.
Give it's Alex, Eruption, isn't it?
Alex,
is it
some Eruption? Love.
No.
It's Beth's favorite song.
No.
We're not going to go into it much. Listen to the drums. Were born in Amsterdam, and they came over here and formed their first band when they moved over with their parents in 1964, and they actually formed what became Van Halen in Pasadena, California in 1972. They changed their name from Genesis when they realized, oh, there's already a band called Genesis, and changed that to Mammoth. Which is interesting now because, because Eddie's son Wolfgang, his band now is called Mammoth. And
wonder where he got that name.
I don't know. So Eddie has always been a virtuoso musician. And so he actually won a piano contest when he was young. He played the whole thing by ear, a classical piano contest. He's just, you know, he's just a virtuoso musician. And actually, we've talked about this before. Alex started out on guitar, and then when Alex was out going to work and doing his paper route, I think Eddie would go in there and play on his guitar. So they flipped, you know. And, of course, you know, Eddie became an icon. But I don't want to sell Alex short because he provided all of those really intricate feels and that sound. And Van Halen is so influential in both songwriting, performance, and in their sound innovations. And so they have a sound that Eddie coined as the brown sound, not to be confused with the brown note on South Park. But so it's described as warm, organic, and powerful with liquid sustain. And no. Stay on task with me. Stay with me.
Sounds an awful lot like the brown note.
It's associated with Eddie's early playing, but he described it, he was inspired by Alex's tone on his snare and saying it sounds like he's beating on a log, just that resonance and that round, rich tone. And so he said when he heard him play, it sounded like he saw the color brown.
He has synesthesia.
Maybe he does have synesthesia. But their bond, you know, Van Halen has been through some personnel changes. And so those two, I mean, we can all agree that whichever era you like best, the two constants were Eddie and Alex, and their relationship stayed tight. They looked out for each other. There was a, I've read about some tension when Alex didn't feel like Eddie took his cancer diagnosis seriously enough. But that's outside of the music. You know, that's when you're just really.
Yeah. That would have happened whether they were in a band or not.
Yeah, that's, you know, and so hopefully, I mean, we all know that family relationships can be severed. And can stupid things can get in the way of family relationships. But if you do it right and you stay focused on what is important, then you can, you know, it's hard to work with somebody anyway. It's hard to be in a band together. It's hard to navigate fame together. And all of these other people came and went, and they managed to stay tight as a unit. They formed the sound. They set the foundation for what Van Halen would become together. It's not just Eddie. Eddie gets a lot of the spotlight, but Alex really looked out for him, and they stayed tight, and over 80 million albums worldwide. So I think that those two really built something that affected rock music for the long term.
So. I'm not going to say anything negative about Van Halen today.
What?
I like Van Halen. That's the thing that gets lost in this whole Van Halen debate is I really like Van Halen. You know.
And the thing is, I really like Van Halen too, but I'm not they probably wouldn't be in my, like, top three bands or anything, you know, but.
You know, it's just, we've gone over the Eddie Van Halen debate. I mean, and I've never said Eddie Van Halen's not a great guitar player. Right. I mean, he is one of the most, and he is a virtuoso. And when it comes to just playing clean and fast, there's really very few people in his class.
Yeah.
You know.
But I do. I think Alex deserves some attention and love because you know that their sound is so influential,
right.
And really Alex's snare tone is the whole basis for all of that. So I don't want that to get lost. All right. Anything else on Van Halen?
No, you get another.
Best pick. Like I got none. All right. I'm gonna go. It's really I find it very strange looking back now that I didn't pick more vocalists, you know, type vocalists, but I didn't. Because my other is also a sibling singer and drummer in the band. More recent, it's Hailstorm.
Don't let me get in your way.
formed in Red Lion, Pennsylvania in 1997. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, siblings, Lizzie and RJ, they began playing together when they were 10 and 13. He's younger. They started as a Christian rock band.
Wow, that's a departure.
All right. Focused on encouraging teens to avoid drugs, sex, and violence.
What happened?
I don't know. Drugs, sex, and violence. Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. They're not very violent.
Not violent.
And not really.
I don't know about drugs.
Not really. Yeah.
But the first, they enjoy talking about other.
So, you know, I mean, Lizzie's vocals
maybe
are.
Maybe they got married.
To.
Not to each other.
No, no, but.
Oh. You know,
married.
I don't think.
She's with the guitar player.
She what?
She's with the guitar player.
Oh.
I don't know if they're married.
Within the confines of marriage, it is a gift from God.
He was married. I think he went through a breakup. But so Lizzie's vocals are very powerful, very raw. I worry about Lizzie's vocal health, how long she will be able to sustain it. But she's been doing it for a good long time, so I don't know. RJ calls his style caveman type. He is, but here's the thing. He is very high energy. Very high energy. He plays hard, but like his feels, like if you, he is not the drummer that blends in the background and just is a machine and keeps time. He has all of these flips and fills and little, you know, these stutters and all these drum licks are so stylized and perfectly placed. They don't, you know, he doesn't just double bass pedal over the top of her, which would ruin everything. I mean, because she goes hard 90% of the time. I mean, she does do ballads, but, you know, that's not her.
No.
That's not her wheelhouse. But when you see them live, he's all over the place. And he's been doing that since the beginning when they were young kids and playing like with their dad. He was still like doing like Tommy Lee drum, you know, cage things that, you know, he's always been a showman, you know, and she's going to get a lot of attention because she's a female rocker. With a very in-your-face attitude and style, but he's always back there just being the most.
He is the most.
He is the most. And I love it. I think, you know, and they put on a fantastic show. So, again, I mean, as we know, a lot of times when you play in a band and the drummer doesn't get a lot because they're sitting back there in the back. So, sometimes, you know, the drummer doesn't get an adequate amount of love and attention. Am I right? Yeah. But they are they're songwriters. They're he sings most of the harmonies.
Yeah, he does.
And like again, when you're listening to their albums, their studio work, so much is overdubbed and stuff. But then when you see them live, I don't know how he has the breath support to do the stuff that he does, because not only is he playing like a beast, he's just so energetic when he plays. It's not like he's just sitting on his drum throne playing really hard stuff. He's a showman.
He's one of, he may be the most entertaining drummer I've ever seen live.
I would agree. And I've seen Tommy Lee several times. And I think, you know, that's what Tommy Lee builds his whole brand on,
right,
is being entertaining. And But, you know, so they write together. I like their relationship too. They really look out for each other. They're concerned about each other's physical health, mental health. You know, and that is probably what makes a band with family members in it, especially siblings, successful, because if you don't look out for each other, the resentment that could come from letting the other one intentionally or unintentionally be harmed in some way could have much more intense consequences than somebody you're not related to, because it's going to bleed over into your, it's going to bleed over into Christmas and stuff, you know? So, I think that, that relationship is probably a lot of the glue for that band. And I foresee, even if people come and go, I don't know that Hailstorm would work without those two being there together.
Because even in their live performances, I mean, obviously she's the spotlight, she's the center of attention, but they feature him so much as well. Really, like, the other two could split and they could replace them easily, but it would hurt either one of them.
Yeah.
A loss. Yeah.
And I mean, they're rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know, they really do collaborate, and they're doing that more and more. But first and foremost, they're going to put on a rock show, and they're going to do their thing. So that's my last pick.
Okay, so here's two siblings that I don't think ever would have been in a Christian band. I would be shocked to find that that's true.
Curious. I don't know who it is.
And they both play guitar.
Oh.
Malcolm and Angus.
Yeah. Yeah.
From AC/DC. So Angus is the one that gets a lot of the attention. He's the soloist, and I mean, he's dynamic. He does kind of the really low Chuck Berry, like he gets it, like, really low when he does the duck walk thing. And you know, he's the one that wears the devil horns and does all the goat horns or whatever they are, you know, and does all the wild stuff and is phenomenal. I mean, Angus is phenomenal, and Malcolm is sometimes the one that doesn't get the attention that he deserves. Because when I listen to AC/DC, I feel like he is the biggest rhythm driver in the band, even more so than the bass guitar, more so than even the drummer. Malcolm is so freaking tight. I mean, he is a pocket that just is constant and allows Angus to go off on these wild tangent runs that are phenomenal. And so it's almost like, you know, you've got this riff that Angus will play, but it's almost like if you listen to that rhythm guitar And there are some great rhythm guitar players. You know, Keith Richards is a great rhythm guitar player. I don't know that there's a better one than Malcolm out there. And I think a lot of what makes AC/DC so good is, number one, they are guitar driven. Like when you talk about great guitar bands, I would put the late Eagles in that group when they had Don Felder and Joel Walsh together. I mean, that is really impressive. Rolling Stones have had two great guitar players, but they don't sound as full and dynamic as Malcolm and Angus do. And so to me, like, is Angus the greatest solo guitar player of all time? No, but man, does he play great riffs. He comes up with great, great riffs. Like, not so it brings the question, what makes a great guitar player? Is it the ability to play a lot of stuff at a virtuosic level? Is that a word? Virtuosic? Virtuosity. With a virtuosity. or is it the ability to get the listener to do whatever you want the listener to do? Can you compel the listener to feel whatever you want them to feel, do what you want them to do? And to me, that's where AC/DC really thrives. They don't make any bones about what they are. They are a rock and roll arena band. They are there for a good time, not for a long time.
You know, they've been around for a long time.
They have been around, but you know, I mean, like, they're going to give you whatever, 2 hours or 3 hours, whatever their concert is, of high octane gonads to the wall, you know, music, times. And when it comes to just a catalog of just rock on stuff, I don't know that there's a band that beats AC/DC. Because they don't deviate.
They don't.
It's like, no. What's your favorite AC/DC ballad?
ballad.
You know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just they know what they do. And that may be one reason why Malcolm is so good at it, because they don't deviate. And maybe why Angus is so good at it. They don't deviate. But they're just together. They understand each other, and they play so well off of each other. And it was for me, it was a deviation from my first two picks. You know, I went vocally and compositionally, whatever, and then vocally, you know, the harmonies were big drivers with my first two picks.
Yeah.
This is just two guys that are a powerhouse together. And, like, we know you can change the lead singer in AC/DC.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, to me, the heart and soul of AC/DC, as good as both of those, and I like both of those lead singers. I like them both.
Right, right.
But the driver of AC/DC has always been the guitar. Has always been the guitar. And they just happen to be brothers. So, there you go. That's my last pick, is AC/DC, and I think Beth gives us our last pick of the draft.
And this is going to be quite different from AC/DC. The Carpenters.
I thought it was going to be the Judds.
Would also be very different.
Your guitar, it sounds so sweet and clear.
It's a little different.
It's just the radio.
So, this was also a departure from my other two picks, because those were also based in harmony. The vocal was the big draw for me on those, but Karen is the main vocal attraction in the Carpenters, and then Richard, her brother, is responsible for most of the composition. And so the thing about the Carpenters is that the beauty is in their restraint, I think, because they could do so much. Like that, like the instrumental you heard there was not simple at all. There was a lot to it, but everything was very intentionally placed. It's just not, let's throw everything we can at the song. You know, everything is placed as it should be. And with Richard knowing Karen so well, he could write to her vocal style, her tone, her, you know, her voice itself, their texture in a way that nobody else could.
Mm-hmm.
And they have over 100 million records sold, 3 Grammys, multiple number one singles, multiple recordings in the Grammy Hall of Fame. And they're one of the best-selling acts of the 70s. They dominated AM and FM radio, and their music is still a staple in film, TV. I mean, a lot of people know the Carpenters without knowing they know the Carpenters.
Right.
And we've talked about her voice time after time, because mm-hmm. it's so pure, it's so warm and rich. Like a lot of people who are famous female vocalists are famous because they can belt or mm-hmm. because they have this really impressive high range. But she has this beautiful, full alto voice, mm-hmm. and it's just, it's like a hug. It's so yeah. good. And she also played the drums on a lot of their recordings.
She's a good drummer.
Which I love a girl doing something that is a male-dominated field. I like it. So Richard's arrangements were, like we said, not simple, but controlled. The power is in the intentionality and the restraint. And I think with Karen's voice, like we've talked about with somebody like Chris Cornell, that pain and that weight in what they sing is because she was living it. Like, she wasn't performing the pain. She was actually feeling emotions. And after her death, their legacy grew because people can reflect back on the songs, and a lot of that melancholy or sadness in some of their songs, and think, oh, you have a different view of it because you know what she was living with, the real pain behind that tone. Defined by the sincerity and just proving that, you know, just because something is soft doesn't mean that it's shallow at all. So, the Carpenters.
So, we have 9 selections now. True story.
True story.
And they are?
Ben has drafted the Beach Boys, the Jackson 5, and AC/DC. Heather drafted Heart, Van Halen, and Hailstorm. And I drafted the Bee Gees, the Backstreet Boys, and the Carpenters.
All right, so I guess we can talk a little bit about the ones that we did not draft. I had Alabama on my list. They had 2 cousins.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Not siblings, had cousins. Teddy Gentry and Jeff Cook were related to each other. I had the Allman Brothers, Dwayne and Greg. Oh, you have no idea how badly I wanted to draft the Isley Brothers and pull Contagious out yes. one more time.
Yes, yes.
Oh, man. I was like, oh, man, I want to draft the Isley Brothers so bad. Yeah, those were the ones I didn't have on my list that did not get drafted. There were, yeah. obviously, you drafted.
Yeah, yeah.
Ones that I had on my
list. I got down to, like, number 7 on my list before yeah, they weren't too. Paramore, when they started.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Zach and Josh.
Yep.
Yep.
Greta Van Fleet. The God, what's their last name? The two brothers? Josh and...
Greta Van Fleet?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, they're brothers. And, they're and the Black Crows.
Mm.
The Robinson Brothers.
I only had one that wasn't drafted because I forgot about a lot of the people that you guys have just mentioned. And I was really scraping. It's the Jonas Brothers.
Oh, it's the...
the Jonas Brothers. Yeah, well...
The Greta Van Fleet is... I may not say this correctly. It's Josh, Jake, and Sam Kiska.
Kiska, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is why they went by Van Fleet, Greta Van Fleet. Because the Kiska brothers doesn't have the same...
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't have the same ring to it. All right. So we've... oh, now I just wish I had just pulled the trigger and... Gone with Contagious.
Are the Isley brothers?
Are they really brothers?
Are they brothers?
Surely they're called the Isley
brothers. The Rogers brothers are not brothers.
There's multiple Isleys.
That's true. I think they are. They've got to be at least family. Because they're less. They're they are.
Yeah,
their last
one of the most iconic
family
musical acts in history. Ronald's the one who sings Contagious.
Yeah.
And then they have O'Kelly Isley Jr. Rudolph Isley. Rudolph, I knew. And then they have added, you know, in and out, you've had Ernie Isley, Marvin Isley, Chris Jasper, who's a brother-in-law, so not. But O'Kelly Isley Jr., Rudolph, and Ronald were the originals, and then they brought in Ernie and Marvin when they got old enough. Yeah.
Nobody mentioned the Osmonds.
They did not make my top nine.
No.
Now, the Partridge Family was not a real family, right?
Correct.
Right.
They were a TV family.
Yes.
All right. What about the Monkees? Were there any brothers in the Monkees?
I don't think so.
Huh. Now, the Everly Brothers were really brothers.
Were they?
They didn't. Weren't they?
Oh,
I couldn't tell you.
Well, let's look it up. Were the Everly Brothers really brothers?
Pointer Sisters are really sisters.
Google does things so much. You know, back in my day, I had to go, like, actually look things up, like, in a book.
And it probably wasn't in
the books.
Yeah.
Don and Phil Everly were biological siblings born in Kentucky. Yep, and it mentions that they have DNA harmony. Bye, bye, love. Ba-boom, ba-boom. Yep.
So, Doobie Brothers, not brothers.
The Blues Brothers.
Oh, my gosh.
We're on a mission from God. Dire Straits, they got family members.
Oh, yeah?
Well, let's look it up.
we're just saying
I'm almost positive, right? Mark and David Knopfler were both brothers. There you go.
Huh.
Oh.
Yeah.
So many options.
But we have nine, and now we need to go from 9 to 5.
Working 9 to 5.
Okay, so looking at this, I feel like there may be some that we'll be able to move directly over, maybe not. I did not vote the Bee Gees, but I would imagine, where were they on my list? There were 7 on my list. Mm. Where did you have the Bee Gees, Heather?
5.
Ooh, 1, 5, and you had them 1, right?
Technically 2.
Oh, well, what was your 1?
Beach Boys.
Where did you have Beach Boys?
6.
Do we feel comfortable moving them over? Mm-hmm. 1, 1, and 6?
Yeah.
And then you had Beach Boys 1.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bee Gees 2.
Mm-hmm.
I had Bee Gees 7. You had where did you have Bee Gees?
5.
There's 2 top 5s. Don't you figure, and I've got them at 7. Don't you figure the Bee Gees are going to go over?
Yeah.
Heart. Now, here's something. I did not have Heart. I bet you did. Did you have Heart?
5.
So they're probably going over, I would imagine. Do we have Purgatory? Do you have a Purgatory list? The next pick was, I'm going to be honest with you, I did not see Backstreet Boys coming.
I didn't either.
So I did not.
I imagine no
have
one
them
did.
On my list. Jackson 5. Did y'all have Jackson 5 on your list?
Yeah.
Where did y'all have them?
4.
You did not have Jackson 5 on your list.
Ooh, interesting.
Did you, was that an omission on purpose or did you forget about them?
Was your whole list rock centric?
Yeah. I don't have a problem with the Jackson 5, of course.
And where did you have Jackson 5?
4.
Okay, we'll go to the next one. Van Halen. I had Van Halen 9.
Me too.
Hellstorm. Did not have Hellstorm.
I didn't because I forgot about them. But okay. I do love them.
The next pick was AC/DC. Did y'all, either one of y'all have AC/DC?
4.
4, 8, and I had them 3, 4, and 8. Okay. Carpenters, I had at 8. Mm. You did not have Carpenters. So, ooh. Okay. Anybody we want to eliminate? Heather, if you had a cut and you could cut one of them completely out, it's not to say that they necessarily will, but if you could cut one, who would you cut out of contention?
So you had Beach Boys,
uh-huh,
Jackson 5,
and AC/DC.
And AC/DC, and you had Bee Gees, Carpenters, and Backstreet Boys?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Probably the Backstreet Boys.
I figured.
I probably would cut Backstreet Boys too. Okay, Beth, if you could cut one.
Yikes.
You may like all these bands.
I do. Here's the thing. The ones I like the least are not going to be omitted, I don't think. And it's not, it's just because out of the ones left, I would choose to listen to AC/DC or Van Halen less often than the others.
Well, which one would
you cut? But I recognize that. Oh my gosh. You go, I'll think about it.
I would.
Oh, wait, you already said.
I have not said which one I would cut.
Oh, I thought you agreed with Heather.
Oh, on Backstreet Boys. I thought we'd already missed that one. But I thought we were all going to, like, nominate one.
Oh.
And then see if we agreed to remove them.
Oh, I didn't understand that's how that worked.
Well, Backstreet Boys was mine, right? I don't want to pick another one.
Yeah.
So if I was going to pick another one to be on the chopping block, I'm going to make both of you mad. And for me, it would be Hellstorm.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not on my list. And pretty much, I think the rest of them, Heart's not on my list either, but I would prefer Heart make the list over Hellstorm. So.
For me, it would probably be AC/DC.
Okay, and you would, well, we've already eliminated one, so.
We have 3 spots left and 5, 6, oh, shoot.
They're so different.
They are.
Who's already over?
Beach Boys and Bee Gees.
Beach Boys and Bee Gees. Okay. So if you were, you would cut AC/DC over Hellstorm then, because you selected Hellstorm.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess AC/DC is probably going to get cut. So we have 3 slots and we have 5 in the running, correct?
Mm-hmm. Jackson 5, Heart, Van Halen, Hellstorm, Carpenters.
Mm-hmm. And y'all would not vote to take Hellstorm out. Heather wouldn't.
Out of the ones that are left, I could get on board with that. I like them more than Van Halen, but by virtue of who Van Halen is, I would recognize that.
Well, of the four that we're talking about, musicians, Eddie's the best.
Yeah.
Musician of the bunch.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So we can vote Hellstorm out. Okay. We got two votes to remove Hellstorm.
Yeah. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4. Now we have to cut one more.
Ooh, and we have to cut one. Who are the four groups left in the running?
Jackson 5, Heart, Van Halen, the Carpenters.
Okay.
Woof.
Ooh. Okay. Is there any of the, like, is there one out of that group that we feel is more deserving that we can move over and make it easier?
Gosh.
Let's flip the script. Heather, if you had to pick one that's not yours.
Yeah.
That's still in the running to move over, who would it be?
Jackson 5.
Okay. If I had to pick one that's still in the running, that's not already over, I would probably pick... I do think Eddie's the best musician, but I think Hart's the best duo. So I would move Hart over. That's not mine. So, Beth, if you had to pick one that's not yours to move over...
I would probably also move Jackson 5 because I love Michael so much.
So that's two votes for Jackson 5. Can we feel comfortable moving Jackson 5 over?
Do that. So now two spots.
And so we've got to eliminate one from Hart, Halen, or Carpenters.
I mean, don't ask me.
Yeah, obviously. So this is your decision.
Oh. Well, I would, okay, based on my list, well, Hart's the one I didn't have on my list. I had the Carpenters 8, Van Halen 9, and I did not have Hart.
That's crazy.
So do y'all really want to leave this up to me, or do y'all want to talk about this for a little bit? Beth, would you prefer Van Halen or Hart? You prefer Hart.
Yeah.
Would you prefer Hart or Van Halen?
I drafted Hart over Van Halen.
Well, then put Hart over. That's fine. Huh?
Every dang time.
Eddie gets, Eddie gets a lot of screen time on this podcast.
That's true.
For, you know, people that just kind of peripherally like Van Halen. You know, like, for them not to be like any of our, like, super-duper favorite bands, Eddie gets a lot of time on screen here, even though we're not on
screen.
So now
it's between... Van Halen and the Carpenters?
Yeah.
For the last spot? Well, obviously, you're going to have to pick because...
Well, I have the Carpenters 8 and Van Halen 9, so I would pick the Carpenters.
Dang. It's like an always the bridesmaid, never the bride thing with Van Halen.
But here's the thing. Like, I know they're both like, you've got the Carpenters, which is the name of the band.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Van Halen, which is the name of the band.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one of the vocalists. I feel like you could come closer to replacing Eddie than you could Karen.
What? She just glitched.
In the Matrix.
This is where you need video.
You don't think?
No. Oh, my God, no. And, I mean, listen, don't get me wrong.
Dude, guitar players are a dime a dozen.
Oh, my God. Direct all your comments. I don't I don't disagree that Karen Carpenter had, like, my eyes twitching. Holy crap. Like,
you could put Randy Rhoads and Van Halen, and they would be amazing.
But they wouldn't be Van Halen.
And they would sell, well, you would still have one Van Halen.
No, I mean, his playing, while great, is not the same as the sound that they made.
It's not the same.
I mean, like, Karen Carpenter is a good vocalist, a unique vocalist. Did she just set the world on fire? And was she like game changer? No. She didn't change the
game. Have you heard Merry Christmas, Darling?
I have. I have. I mean, let's face it. I mean, she did not change the game.
Oh, it's not about influence. It's about who's the best. I'm just saying.
Well, even so, you just said you talked about how much Eddie was a virtuoso and how he was. You said he was the best musician of the ones left when there were a lot more left.
Right. Yeah.
So, what is your reasoning of moving Karen Carpenter over rather than the best musician by your own admission on the list?
I think Eddie would have been easier to replace.
No, absolutely not.
I know you feel that way. I accept your opinion. And it's a valid one. I agree.
So you couldn't replace Karen Carpenter with any...
And not call it the Carpenters. Because then there would be the Carpenter and a new person.
Well, it would be Van Halen and a new person.
But it's not the Van Halens.
But it's not the Van Halens. Really, it's just Van Halen. One. Yeah. And you still have
Oh, my God. That's stupid.
And you would still have a Van Halen.
No, that is just stupid.
You would still have a Van Halen on drums.
No. We're not doing that. No. That argument is dumb. No. No.
It's factually correct.
No, Mr. Adieu. No, we're not getting into grammar rules. No. Mm-mm. No.
Well, so now we want to rank them. I did already put the Carpenters at 5.
Oh, well.
I admitted that. Well, I feel like Ben had already, he had already said.
Yeah,
he just didn't like what he said.
No, but it doesn't, what he says doesn't even make sense. I mean, he just totally backtracked on his whole reasoning.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
I was comparing two different groups.
Uh-huh.
And of those two, I went with Van Halen.
Flawed logic.
But then when it was another group in Van Halen, I went with the other group.
Okay,
so we're ranking the Beach Boys, Bee Gees, Jackson 5, Hart, the Carpenters.
I think Hart and Jackson 5 should be switched.
Oh, my gosh. And that's up to me.
Well, so
I guess. What
we have.
I'm okay with Beach Boys, Bee Gees being 1 and 2. That's how I had them.
Okay. Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. And then it's between Hart and who?
Hart and Jackson 5 for 3 and 4.
Well, I want Jackson 5 3. She wants Hart 3. So you're the swing vote.
Dang, dude. I love Michael so much. And I also love some girl power. This is hard. Oof. Holy crap. I'm gonna say heart.
Okay.
We did it. The final ranking of the best family bands in the history of the world. Number 1, the Beach Boys. 2, the Bee Gees. 3, Hart. 4, Jackson 5. 5, the Carpenters.
I don't. It's a list.
All right. Well, there we have it. And the siblings, the sibling rivalry over Van Halen continues. We are getting a lot of mileage out of the Van Halen debate. We're going to need a best of Van Halen.
Didn't we already do that?
Yeah, but I mean a best of Van Halen, just like a compilation of our conversations about Van Halen.
Could be a lengthy episode.
There's a lot of them. Because we debated over frontman.
Yeah. Guitarist.
American rock bands. Did Van Halen make the top five?
I think they did.
We'd have to go back and look.
Oh, man. I'm not sure.
They pop up a lot.
Yeah.
They do. So, we're glad everyone listened to this episode today. And remember to find us on social media, like, share, comment, review, all of that amazing stuff. It goes a long way to helping the back-to-back world champion music podcast team right here, the Musicalist Podcast, two-time RCAST Best Music Podcast Award winners, and we're proud of that. And they said that it's not just Arkansas, so we took that to mean the entire world. So we won the best music podcast in the world, but probably mostly regional to Arkansas, probably.
There was somebody from California. Somebody that's got nominated from California.
So that's definitely nationwide.
National,
yeah.
For sure. So we're the best in America.
At least.
At least in the United States. So, so thank you for voting and thank you for listening. We would really appreciate it if you would like, share, comment, get in touch with us. If you have an idea that you think would be a great podcast episode, shoot it to us. Find us on social media and then we'll try to work that into our timeline. So again, you can find us on Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube. I think that's it. I think. again, thank you, and we'll catch you in 2 weeks.
We bid you adieu.
Thanks for joining us on the Musicalist Podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. She almost had it.